August is a good time to clean up the closet a little bit. Get rid of the summer stuff that you didn't use. Prepare for your autumn wardrobe and upgrade the basics that you'll actually reach for every week. That's why I like Quince. They make fewer, better pieces that feel premium, but don't come with the luxury markup. For me, the piece I keep coming back to is the 100% European linen drawstring beach pants with the matching shirt. I love wearing them on beach vacations because they're easy, they're breathable, comfortable, and they look put together without feeling like I'm trying too hard. Throw them on during the day, wear them by the water, or dress up a little bit at night. That's the kind of staple I actually use because it has versatility. And that's really what Quince does well. They specialize in everyday pieces that work harder, like ultra soft organic cotton tees and premium Magnolia cashmere sweaters that can go from a casual workday to dinner out. If your basics are starting to feel worn out, Quince makes it easy to upgrade with premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the fit, structure, and quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a go-to for everything from hotel quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Guys, you've been hearing it for so long now how I tell you have to go to quince.com because the website is so fun for all the options that they have. It's a great website to go click around, and the prices can't be beat. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers. Go to quince.com/crypto101. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/crypto101. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast, a special Friday edition. It is August, and you know what that means. Or it's close to August. It's July 31st, but when you're listening to this, it could be August 1st. It is time for that part of the year where it's the TiVo Roadshow. Where is TiVo next? I know Brendan loves to play this game the most. Over the next month, we'll be doing rundowns from various different cities across the country. But not to worry. We schedule the time to deliver you the news, to bring you the charts, to show you what you need to know. And Bitcoin is moving. Where is it going to move to next? Because right now, nobody is talking about crypto, but the Clarity Act, as the odds seemed to go down, the conversation only moves up more and more. Tokenization continues to lead the charge. HUD beats Solana, and then we've lost a moment of silence later in the show for the fallen ones. Some exchanges have blown up. This is what we see in the depths of bear markets. But could that be a good signal? We're going to break that all down for you today and more as I welcome in my good friend, Brendan. Brendan, happy Friday. Welcome back to the show. And how are you doing, my friend?
Happy freaking Friday, TiVo. Yeah, it's a good day here. Minus a little bit of red coming in on Mr. Bitcoin. Was up about 65,000, but taking a little bit of a spill. Might even break back down into 62,000 as we're here live. Certainly a lot to go over. Excited to be able to dive into it. But where should we begin, my dear?
I think we need to pull up the charts right now, because if you are a long-term listener of the Crypto 101 podcast, you might remember the term, and I know you do, Brendan, you might remember the term. Oh, yeah. Crypto bagel. And it was around 1 year ago today. We're at the same beach house and we introduced the crypto bagel. We even put it on the chart and we ended up having quite the rally. So can we channel the energy from the crypto bagel last year to propel the markets higher? Possibly.
I sure hope so. I'll tell you what, crypto over the last month has been one of the top performing assets. And I know people are going to hear that and they're going to be like, Brendan, what do you mean? Crypto still isn't doing great, this and that. Just hear me out here, because if you compare how Bitcoin has performed over the last month specifically to a number of different asset classes, it is the best performing assets, just period. So if you take a look at, you know, Bitcoin versus NASDAQ here, I'll have Bitcoin staying on the left. In fact, I'll even turn on watermarks just so we can actually see what is on the screen. So let me do that real fast for good old Bitcoin as well over here. But we have Bitcoin on the left, we have NASDAQ on the right. If you look since, like, let's just say like June 30th, right? NASDAQ fell about 11% to the downside. You know, from top to bottom, it was even more. It was closer to like 12.5%. What has Bitcoin done since June 30th? Well, you see it over here. It was able to rally up 15%. And even at this date, it's still up about 8 to 9%. So NASDAQ falling double digits, Bitcoin rising double digits. What about if we look in other places? You know, you could look at the other side of TradFi, right? The smaller market caps, not just tech. You know, they fell by about 5% if you're looking from around the end of June, June 30th, up until really yesterday, down almost 5.5%. Again, Bitcoin up almost 10%. What if we compare this to some of the leading sectors that we've seen here, like semiconductors, right? Well, these have fallen off the high since kind of the end of June, 28% to the downside. DRAM, the memory sector, falling 45% to the downside. And even measuring something like gold over here from the ending part of June, or even like middle of June, end of June, you can kind of see it happening over here. I mean, these things downtrending back into their lows, down 8% since the 17th. You can kind of see in Bitcoin over here is, you know, really flat during that same time period, but forming bottoms. You even look since the start of June over here, gold again falling about double digits. And if you look since the start of June over on Bitcoin on the left, well, Bitcoin again is up almost, you know, double digits depending on where you're measuring it from. So what you have here is you have Bitcoin being really the performing asset over the last month, almost 2 months here, whether you compare it to gold, the tech sector, the large caps, the smaller market caps like the Russell, as we showed, you compare it to semiconductors, memory, doesn't matter. Bitcoin has actually been one of the best places to not only preserve value, but actually see upside reward at a time where everything else is falling. And that's something that we're seeing. And I think that that is going to be an important point kind of moving forward, which is how can Bitcoin, you know, in the whole crypto space actually perform and hold up at a time where there might be fear elsewhere. And so that's going to be the big question. I actually think that the big risk here doesn't necessarily come from Bitcoin. I think if there's any downside risk, it's actually coming from the traditional financial space, because as we just showed, I mean, you see like DRAM blowing up 40%+ to the downside, semiconductors blowing up 20, almost 30% to the downside, you know, tech falling into a correction zone with NASDAQ in a free fall, coming back to that 200-day moving average. I think if there's any kind of risk here, it comes from the traditional financial space. And for once, you know, or not for once, but for the first time in a long time, you have Bitcoin outperforming to the upside, preserving value better. And I think a lot of the bearish catalysts really aren't coming from crypto here. It's coming from the traditional side. Now, you also have geopolitical stuff, right? You have the Fed and trying to figure out what they're going to do. You have inflation stuff. There is a lot going on the traditional side, which is why I say, I think if there's any kind of downside risk here for Bitcoin, I think it stems from what we have seen over there, as opposed to what we're specifically seeing in the crypto sector, because crypto's been doing largely well. Now, we'll get into this a little bit later on, but what we have had is Ethereum being one of the best performers. That's largely due to Robinhood Chain. Again, we'll revisit that. There's some pretty impressive numbers that I think are worth going over here. But from the technicals on the charts, TiVo, you know, what we've seen here recently was three failures to go lower on Bitcoin, right below 60K. You tried to get down and hold below 60K. You failed that in early February. He came back down in early June, failed to really go convincingly below 60K. Came back down towards the end of June, start of July. Again, a failure to really get through that $60,000 level three separate times over in here. So now what we did is we pushed back up to 67,000 for the second time. We kind of bottomed out, hit this, bottomed out, hit this. I like this to a degree because we did not form a lower high. So at least we know that the bulls have some strength here and they're not, you know, seeing a lower high. So an equal high is better than a lower high. I know a lot of us would have probably liked to see higher highs, but you know, after pushing up to this, you get that short-term golden cross, you have Bitcoin trading a little bit higher. I think all of these are actually pretty good signs to see. Now, what I don't like here is, again, that kind of rejection, and what it looks like we're getting today is a break back beneath these short-term moving averages, back beneath these prior kind of highs, back beneath the golden cross. It's really something I wanted the Bitcoin and the crypto chart to avoid. And of course, you know, it's been outperforming for the last month compared to most other asset classes. And we're doing the rundown here today, and Bitcoin's got to throw us a curveball. And it's down 3.5%, while NASDAQ's down, you know, 1/3%. So a little bit of a curveball here today, but that is actually pretty different from what we've seen in, you know, not only recent weeks, but recent months, where you have Bitcoin really seeing less volatility to the downside. Today is one of those one-off days where it's seeing more, which again is pretty different. So what I would say here is that, you know, again, not a good look, I guess, breaking beneath these kind of critical levels once again. If you are going to get an extended period to the downside, I think you got to re-eye up that $60,000 zone. We've tested it three times before. It's acted as a big support all three times. Personally, I would love to see some sort of higher low where we don't get all the way back down to these prior lows. I think any kind of higher low with momentum to push us back into the highs is a really good sign to see, enabling Bitcoin to go into the low 70,000s on a breakout of 67K. Now, if we don't get that higher low and we revisit the lows over here, you know, you got to be paying attention. A fourth retest, you know, maybe with authority to the downside could be a scary sign. Maybe that's a sign that we need another flush out to the downside. I'm not saying 10K or 20K or 30K, but maybe we go somewhere into the 50,000s a little bit deeper than we've seen this cycle. And I think that that has to remain a possibility here. And it's something I'm prepared for. I was actually shooting for the bulls here a little bit, trying to take some swings at some stuff. But, you know, if we aren't going to get that and we're going to kind of continue to get this gnarly move to the downside, then I think we have to be prepared to either watch just below 60K or around 60K. And of course, if we do get that cycle breakdown into those cycle lows or new cycle lows, then, you know, listen, if Bitcoin gets into the mid-low 50s, it's somewhere I'm comfortable buying. I'm a believer that the bulk of Bitcoin's downside is over. That's not to say, again, that we can't get more downside. I still think that that's something that's on the table here. However, you know, I would want to be a buyer in the 50,000s for Bitcoin. Heck, I'm happy to be a buyer in the low 60,000s here for the long term. But I think what a lot of people are looking for is a bottom here in the next couple of months, if not sooner than that. So I would say, in my opinion, it's impossible to fully predict this, but I am looking for a bottom by October, if not actually sooner than that. I think that that's possible. But again, a lot of those downside risks are coming, I think, from the traditional financial space. The final thing I'll say, Tivo, I'll hand it off back to you just after this. Final thing I'll say is I have been looking at the relative strength index and some of these indicators. I think a lot of the longer term indicators are also kind of saying here of like, hey, there's deep area value down here. The only thing that I really don't like, again, I like the daily MACD. I like the daily MACD. I like the weekly MACD. I like the weekly RSI. I like the monthly RSI. I like the monthly MACD. I like the, you know, anchored VWAP off the last cycle lows. There's a lot of stuff that I do like here. The one thing that if I had to be a little bit nitpicky about is that since the end of 2024, so like November, October of 2024, almost 2 years ago, every single rally that we've had has seen a lower level of relative strength. And I've been a big advocate of this in that in a bull market, you want to see increasingly more levels of strength, right? Higher levels of strength as the market accelerates, as you go on a run to the upside. What we've seen is that since the end of 2024, every single rally has been weaker relative to the prior ones. So if you go back to like November, end of October of 2024, you had the RSI hitting an 84, and then it came down to a 76 or 78, and then it came down to a 75, and then it came down to a 72, and then a 70, and then a 68. And then now you kind of see that continuing around a 62, and every single rally looks like it's just getting weaker than the prior ones. And we came right up into that same zone where you would expect a lower high. And I think, unfortunately, at least at the moment, and this could change, but for the moment, we are getting yet another lower high here saying, hey, this rally that we had to the upside was weaker, not only than the last one, but all prior rallies than we've seen in the last 2 years. And that's something that has to change for a bull market to really come in with full strength. You need to see the rallies getting stronger, not weaker. And that's just something that we haven't seen quite yet. And this kind of feeds into that idea of there's not as much strength behind this as I think we would want, despite price action getting a little bit of a bump to the upside. So again, I know that probably sounds more bearish than it actually is. It's just something I'm watching closely to really get a sense of when the bulls are going to fully take control with a bit more aggressiveness.
Everybody is talking about AI right now, but the AI that actually matters is the kind that saves you time, helps you make smarter decisions, and takes work off your plate. And if you're running an e-commerce business, shipping is one of those things that can either keep you moving or completely slow you down. That's why I like ShipStation. It's an end-to-end order fulfillment platform built for e-commerce businesses, and its AI is trained on decades of real shipping data from billions of shipments across the world. So instead of juggling a bunch of different tools, ShipStation helps you stay in control. It can alert you when your stock is low, recommend the best carrier selections and rates, automate tasks, and help you save time as you grow. You also get inventory syncing across sales channels, automatic rate shopping, a branded returns portal, and integrations with accounting and CRM software, all in one place. If I were running an e-commerce store, this is exactly the kind of tool I'd want, because once the orders start coming in, you don't want shipping to be the thing that's holding you back. Over 1 million businesses have trusted ShipStation to optimize and scale their shipping. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code crypto. That's ShipStation.com, code crypto. ShipStation.com, code crypto. Taxes and fees apply. I don't know about you, but dinner sneaks up on me all the time. I'll open the fridge and realize I have no protein ready. And at that point, I'm not trying to go to the store, make a last-minute grocery run, and gamble on whatever meats or burgers are left at the store. That's why Omaha Steaks is a great freezer move. It's like having a trusted butcher at home and quality protein when you need it the most. Omaha Steaks has earned its reputation with over 100 years. It's the same beef trusted in kitchens across the country, shipped straight to your door. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, but it didn't, just minutes. And if you never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect place to start. You get 20 premium steak burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak, 4 filet mignon burgers, 4 New York strip burgers, 4 ribeye burgers, 4 brisket burgers, and 4 sirloin burgers. Guys, this is the altcoin basket of burgers right here. If me and Brian were on the rundown, we would be divvying these up 50-50 because you know how we like to grill in the summer. So you're not just getting a box of burgers, you're getting different flavor profiles, different textures, and real steakhouse style variety you can throw on the grill or cook up fast during the week. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with the promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
It's all great points. And then I'll end up sharing the screen now, Brendan. Now, actually, I'm down here at the beach. I had coffee with a friend of mine. He's a big-time analyst over at Wall Street from New York City, and I was pleasant enough to have some coffee with him this morning, and he was asking me what I thought about Bitcoin, and I was kind of just told him, I was like, actually, I haven't really thought too much about it. I've turned on my reoccurring buys like me and you've talked about the last couple of weeks, and I really forgot about it. So that's kind of where I am at these levels too. Comfortable buying. Again, we're just wetting the beak, little dips every week, really not thinking about it. And as I bring up this chart here, it's exactly what I like to see from my angle of kind of being that, you know, the social media research kind of analyst on the team is, hey, nobody's talking about this stuff. The tweet volume on Bitcoin, Ethereum's at a 12-month low. And then when you see that divergence in price where there's, you know, this is the best, you know, a good place to be over the last, you know, month, 2 months compared to a lot of other places in the market. I like that divergence because it's we've been in these cycles long enough. It's when, hey, when these two things go together, like you see in 22 there, 24, the tops of these charts, you can lay over the Bitcoin price. The Bitcoin price is at its highest. The tweet volume and people talking about it online is at its highest. That's, you know, that's where we get close to the tops. And so I like the divergence here at the bottom where nobody's talking about this stuff. It's boring. It's not hot. It's not sexy. We've covered it enough on this show comparing, you know, crypto to the AI trade, the data center trades, the memory chip trades. It's not the hot trade right now. And, you know, that's the type of stuff you need to pull your research in and do your own homework and make your own decisions. But, yeah, I feel comfortable where we are, where the volatility is lightened and people truly really aren't talking about it. And I think the Clarity Act's been an interesting point of conversation. We were out at the Out East Summit, Bryce and I, and the first interview went out live. So if you haven't seen that, it's with Josh Frank of the Tie. A great conversation, kind of kicked off our summit series, if you will. And there's going to be a ton of episodes continuously coming out. So I'm going to be talking about this over the next couple weeks because they really are some amazing episodes, some great insight. And the one I'm putting out next is going to be on Monday, is the former CFTC chairman, Chris Giancarlo with Potomac Investments. And he kind of gave a great pitch to Sure, we want the Clarity Act to pass, but he showed us both sides of what he's thinking about and his knowledge of being the former CFTC chairman and knowing personally the people who are now head of the SEC and head of the CFTC. They have a plan. He kind of rolled out. He's like, hey, this is kind of what I've heard and from talking to these people. They have a plan for the Clarity Act to pass. They have a plan if the Clarity Act doesn't pass. And either way, there's kind of a road over the next 2 years to get the rules of the road paved. So looking forward to that. But transitioning to our next topic, I think it's quite interesting to see all these, you know, these big financial institutions come out over the last week to support the Clarity Act. So you got Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, Fidelity, Franklin Templeton, Charles Schwab. Franklin Templeton had a huge presence at the Out East conference. I think we got three different interviews with people from Franklin Templeton. Friend of the show, Franklin Templeton, Chris Perkins from Crypto 100 got merged in officially to be head of Franklin Crypto. And we got a lot of his teammates on the pod and got to hang out with Chris himself there. So super cool week, a lot of awesome interviews going up, but it easily transitions us into our next topic of, you know, I feel like the Clarity Act, you know, the percentages have completely dropped in the 30% now. Obviously, these bets are for the rest of the year, but everybody kind of eyed up this week being, you know, kind of the tipping point before the August recess, because then when they come back with midterms, not too much is going to get done. But Tom Lee, friend of the show, had a good point here on CNBC of why this matters many more than many realize. So let's take a listen.
The Clarity Act needs to be passed. What does it do?
Yeah, the Clarity Act creates a national body to govern crypto in the U.S. So a singular entity, which will be the CFTC. It's a big deal because if you're, as you know, the big banks and the asset managers are tokenizing assets and want to build stablecoin rails. If they have to be subject to state regulations or local regulators, it is going to give a lot of people cold feet.
But are they for it or they're against it?
It's many of the asset managers are for it. Charles Schwab, Franklin Digital,
because
Fidelity.
This is forgive me if I don't have my years exactly right. I believe the SEC was created in 1934, I think, yeah. Ish. This is a 1934 type moment. And the reason the SEC was created is because state regulators, you might have one rule in Indiana and another rule in Virginia, and investors like, I can't manage both these rules. Bitcoin is having, all crypto is having that 1934 correct type moment, right?
I love it. We'll pause it there. That 1934 type moment is a great comparison of what this really means for the industry. We just want the rules of the road. And it was funny. I'll talk to some friends or family and they'll kind of ask like, the Clarity Act is not looking good. It's over for crypto now, right? And it's like, or no, they said if it passed, they're like, oh, are you happy? It doesn't look like it's going to pass, because like if it did pass, it would be over. And it's obviously a lot of people in the industry, you know, you don't understand. It's like, hey, the good actors in the industry want this to pass. We want the rules of the road.
Yeah, I mean, TiVo, stop me at any point. I might get a little bit off the rails here. I think that part of the reason this thing isn't getting passed, and again, we never get political, but I think a little bit of it is political. I've seen like people on one side basically saying, oh, well, we don't like what's happened here with the president and his crypto stuff. And obviously he has exposure there. I just think that this is the kind of thing, right? Because it involves the monetary side of things, just apolitical, look at it, set up the structure. If you don't like him doing it, then create safeguards. But I do feel like this has been blocked for too long. And you have two sides to it, right? You know whose name we didn't see on that list earlier was JP Morgan, right? Jamie Dimon, not very happy about the Clarity Act. You have a lot of the other asset managers and banks that have come around and said, we do support this. I think it's time. I think you're seeing increasingly more pressure to get this thing passed. And I don't think that, I don't know. I don't like the reasons. I don't think the reasons for it being prevented from being passed are just, not in my opinion. I think that this is something where we can come together, we can get this thing passed. It's not going to be perfect. I've been a big advocate of there's going to be give and take on both sides. I just don't feel like there has been give and take on both sides. It feels like one side's willing to give some and the other side's not willing to give any. And again, not just talking about the political side, you look at like what JP Morgan has said or Jamie Dimon has said, again, very one-sided of, we believe it should be this way, and they're really not willing to give any leeway. But I think you see that happening on a couple of fronts. And it's frustrating because who pays the price here? It's the innovators, it's the builders, it's the everyday person like you and I, where you see all these other sectors going on these historic runs, right? Metals going on runs, AI sector going on runs, S&P hitting new all-time highs, NASDAQ hitting new all-time highs. And then you still have like millions of Americans who are invested in this and they're waiting to get this. And, you know, games are being played to prevent this. And I think that the average listener probably finds that frustrating because it's been going on for too long now. And people are just like, all right, enough. Like, everyone act like adults. Let's get this thing passed the way that it needs to. And that's what we're ready to see. So that's how I feel. I think there's mounting frustration here. And people just want to see this passed. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, Congress is about to go into recess here, which means that it basically, you know, has extremely low odds of getting passed until like October. When they start coming back towards like September, October, and then you go straight in the midterms, right? October, November, big midterm push. And then all of a sudden, you know, offices might change. And then you have New Year's, right? You have Thanksgiving, you have Christmas, you have New Year's after that. Then you're looking into next year. You could have new people in office by then. And then it kind of just kicks this can down the road. So I think it's time. I mean, listen, I can state my opinion. I think a lot of people have said it's time. But especially with the mounting support from the traditional financial side as well, like, let's just get this thing passed.
Yeah, and again, you're going to see, you know, whether they were just talking points, bluffs, or points of action. I know Coinbase has said, hey, if this doesn't pass, we're going to start moving, you know, large amounts of our business offshore. And that was kind of one of the pushing points is like, hey, keep this onshore, you know, make us the leaders in this space. Obviously, there's a huge economy around it, a huge business. You know, we've been here for years making podcasts, and we just feed off the entire economy as a whole. So it'll be interesting. We're obviously going to keep it track here, but the industry, what I find the most interesting is like the industry just kind of continues to move on, right? The tokenization boom is happening, a 522% increase in tokenized equity holders year to date. Again, just showing that the demand's there, both, you know, in the US but also globally. That's the whole point, is unlocking the financial system, unlocking the ability to invest to people around the world with tokenized assets. And the leader, seemingly, is Hoodchain. I mean, Robinhood just absolutely taking the ball, passing Solana. I think this has been Robinhood, shout out to their PR team, shout out to their building team. You know, they've owned the summer. It's been a Hood summer.
Yeah, it has been. And they've been, I think, one of the big drivers of this run. You look at like the statistics that they put up. This is a great one. Flipping Solana to become the number one chain by RWA holders in the world is impressive. Because how long have they been around in really active? What, like a few weeks? And they're putting in these kind of numbers? More than Solana, more than Ethereum, more than Base. It's wildly impressive. But I think that that's just kind of the nature of what they're doing, right? They've basically said, we want to tokenize everything. We want you to be able to trade any kind of contract, any kind of asset at any point in the day. And they're just barely dipping their toes into what's happening here, right? It's not even allowed in the US yet. And they're already seeing this kind of activity. You know, imagine if they continue to improve this and they say everyone, you know, every country is allowed to do this, even the United States, which is a huge market. All of a sudden, people can start trading through the weekend. They can start trading 24/7. If you didn't have access to these assets, now you can. I think it'd be really cool if you could trade, you know, tokenized options through the weekend, tokenized futures contracts through the weekend, kind of like a perpetual. Stuff like that. Like anyone trade any asset, anytime, anywhere. That's kind of the way that we're moving. But yeah, Robinhood Chain has been a massive success. You look at some of like their DEX volume has been incredible. Their activity has been pretty shocking. Obviously, RWAs have been the big play here. But I think we're going to continue to see a bigger push into RWAs and tokenization. I was just looking at, and I can't remember if I posted this, but I was just looking at, I think it was BNY Mellon talking about their plans. Obviously, BlackRock's talked about their plans. A number of other different banks and asset managers are all getting into this stuff and saying, you know, listen, we think tokenization is here to stay. And it makes sense. So, yeah, I think if there's a sector to watch out for right now, it's probably tokenization. I know Ondo, who we've had on and we've talked about before, you know, aside from the just fundamental success that they've seen, their token price has been going pretty crazy to the upside lately on a nice little breakout. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Again, what you're seeing here is tokenization is growing. I don't think this stops anytime soon. And Robinhood, friend of the show, you know, very bullish on them because they're one of the, I was going to say like one of the best performers. They're one of the leaders at doing it at this current day, if that makes sense, right? The way that they're doing it, and I think the way that you can get access to it is super easy. So don't want to like overglaze, but obviously Robinhood, friend of the show, we've had them on before. They're one of the leaders in this and have to give the respect where it's due.
Absolutely. We love our friends over at Robinhood. So many have been on over the years. And, yeah, you know, again, just the famous Robinhood call that we gave out at $9 a share. People forget.
Yep.
People forget. A lot of people in this beach house love the $9 Robinhood call. A friend of the show here is with us.
I think that was in the heart of the last bear market, too. We looked at it. I think it was in the heart of the. Yeah. And we were looking at this thing. And I think you were the one to catch it. And you were like, dude, look at the crypto progress that they're making, even in a bear market. And man, was it right.
They came on the pod. It was Mr. Kerbot, head of crypto there, or GM of crypto at the time. He came on and laid out this whole plan. And it was just like, it was an hour long podcast of this plan to build in this bear market. I was like, all right, this isn't going away. So it was it was a no-brainer. And so you can kind of take, again, it feels, you know, I don't,
we're,
you know,
back obviously in the bear.
There's not a 10x, I don't think, in the next 2 years for Hood again here, at least stock price wise, but it's good to see people build. I think that's kind of what we talked about in just the great podcast that we've had. What we had Robinhood, we've had Coinbase, and Bryce and I went to the summit. You're going to be getting, you know, 15 more interviews out of the summit, and there's a lot of positivity in the space when price action isn't there. So again, that's another sign that you like to see. A Moment of Silence for the Fallen Ones is the title of our next segment here. And as much as there's a lot of positive stuff in the space, there's been some negative as well, with projects, exchanges shutting down and disappearing in 2026. And off the top, obviously, that's sad. Number one, we don't want people to lose money. We don't want people to lose jobs. History shows when this stuff, especially the exchanges, start up, that can be a sign of kind of a bottoming signal. Again, it's one of those data points that, you know, if you go back in history and kind of overlay some charts, you can see that, you know, in the depths of the bear, when people are over leveraged and they aren't using proper risk management, you know, things have to close up shop. So what do you take from this list? It's a pretty big list for 26.
Yeah, I mean, let's just go through a few of these. BitMEX, been around for so long, right? Arthur Hayes, the big guy behind there, everyone knows him. BitMart, that's the big one to really go under here as of recently. On top of that, I mean, a lot of names that I recognize: Moonbeam, Cypher, Loopspring, Radiant. You have Redstone. I remember them because I liked gaming a lot. Let's keep going down. A couple other big names. You have Syndicate Labs. That was another one that, you know, I was, you know, it's unfortunate. Continue going down. Who else do we have? We have Block Native, Balancer, Polynomial, Magic Eden Wallet. That was Magic Eden, the EVM, Dapp Radar, Parsec, Bitcom, Block Fills, another big name, Goldfinch, RIP. That one hurt. I know it hurt me. who else do we have here? You have Zero Network. You have, I mean, the list goes on, right? Prism.
It's a big list, and we've had a lot of people, whether it was on like the summit or the podcast over the years. Again, there's been positive times for all these companies, or at least most of them, the ones that Brendan said, and they were working on interesting stuff. But you know, again, it's a business, so if it's not working, it's got to close down. And when your industry takes a downturn, it's, you know, people got to close up shop. That's just how it works. And that's part of the business cycle as a whole.
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunately part of the cycle, but there is good news to come. And scroll down real fast. I thought I saw someone who's a friend of the pod over here. Dare I say, a founder of the pod, even talking about this. So shout out Aaron. We love Aaron, a.k.a. Pizza Mine. Absolutely legendary over here. and former co-host. So I saw him commenting. We saw that right before we got on here. We're like, oh, look, it's Aaron. But there is good news to come out of this. And the good news is if we go to the next slide, TiVo, or the next post, what you see is historically a bottom comes in after these kind of wipeout events, right? You have these big casualty events. The bodies, you know, float up to the surface. And you see that out of these blow-up events, historically, the markets find a bottom around these areas. You know, you go back to Mt. Gox and then BitGrail and then FTX. Now you have BitMart and BitMEX. And the list goes on. And yeah, you know, historically, there's a lot of upside that can be seen after these. You know, you see 11,000 and then 2,000 and then 700. And, you know, now if you're looking at this saying, okay, well, what if it's even half of that, which is what they're going to measure here, you'd be still looking at a tremendous amount of upside for Bitcoin. So yeah, I mean, this is what you look for. You look for the blood in the streets. You look for the bodies to be rising to the surface. And historically, that has acted as a bottom signal. We'll have to wait and see if that remains true this time. But again, as we've said, TiVo, despite whatever kind of downside may be left, I want to be a buyer down here. You know, if it's 60, you know what, 62,000, which is I think where we're at right now. Yeah, 62,000. Or if we're at 55,000, I'm not going to care that much. You know, again, I'm looking a year, 2 years, 3 years out. I'm not going to really care too much whether I bought at 62 or 55, and just buying a little bit every day.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then I just want to give out a shout out to the chat real quick. Pretty active chat for Friday. We got Jim from Orlando. We've got Kevin from Lakeland, Florida boys in the house with you, Brendan. I'm over here in New Jersey. We got the Bandit active as always. Appreciate everybody listening on a Friday. Let us know in the comments if you're new here, where you're watching from. We love to see all the different states. Sometimes we go international, which is always fun. Let us know where you're watching in from today. Give this video a like if you're new. Bottom right, click our logo, subscribe. We do this every week. Some good news out of exchanges failing. FTX paying back some creditors this week, $900 million going out creditors tomorrow. It's the fifth distribution round. Total payouts out to $10 billion now since the collapse in 2022. That's good for the creditors. I mean, they're making, I know a lot of individuals really got hurt from this, but it's been fascinating to follow this journey. If you really dig into what FTX had stake in, so I think it was like Anthropic, right? SpaceX, you know, as much of a scumbag Sam Bankman-Fried was and got caught being a fraud, he did have an eye for some investments. You know, that guy had quite the portfolio, and if he wasn't, you know, if he did it the right way, he could be sitting pretty right now. But instead, he's not. He's behind bars. So it's always interesting to hear the FTX news. The real, as I always said on the show, the real winners of the FTX bankruptcy were the lawyers. Holy cow!
Yeah,
what a bunch of legends. They got quite the paycheck there. What did you put here? Rest R.I.P. Leopold. Let's wrap up with that, and then we can take some questions in the chat if there are any.
This is a big one. So again, this kind of fits into that theme of when there's blood in the streets, you know, look to be the bull. You know, that's kind of my stance on this. There's blood in the streets. There's body floating to the surface. This was more so on the traditional financial side, but I still think it fits into the theme that we were just talking about a few minutes ago, right? With BitMart and BitMEX and all the other names blowing up. This is one on the traditional financial side that was, dare I say, like legendary, like generational run, century-wide run, probably one of the craziest stories of the century. What this guy did, he's young. I think he just turned 25. He was like 24 years old. I think he was like 23 or something, 22, when he started his hedge fund, which was called Situational Awareness. He started the thing out, I want to say they started, I think, at $225 million. And he rode it from $225 million to $45 billion in 2 years, TiVo. It is ridiculous. So $225 million to $45 billion in like 2 years' time, under 2 years, I believe. Insane run. He was doing quarters where he was making hundreds of percent quarter after quarter after quarter, and it was compounding. And everyone thought he was the biggest genius. He's this young guy, used to work for OpenAI, left it to do this thing.
This is the Leopold.
Yes, this the Leopold. The same... I thought that's what you said. Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't know. I read the name. I've always just, the name always had a picture. They had a picture of the guy all the time on X. Oh. I didn't realize this was the same kid.
Yeah, same kid. And he
basically. He was the chosen one.
He was the chosen one. And RIP as of yesterday, we got the news,
no
TiVo.
No way.
He, I guess it got a little bit too overambitious. The generational run is over. And, you know, TiVo, I don't want to get you in trouble, but the group that came in and swoop him up and buy all the assets was Citadel.
Friend of the show, Ken Griffin.
Yeah, friend of the show. But yeah, it basically came at a time where I believe on the 24th, he was saying, like, this is one of the best buying opportunities that we've ever seen. We want to buy the dip. But I believe that they were leveraged at like 4 times. Wow. And it just, the dip was too big. I mean, some of these things fell by, as we saw, like a lot of those DRAM plays and semi plays fell by 30, 40, 50%. And he was levered up and it was just too much. I don't think they could raise enough cash. And they had to sell off from their peak of $45 billion, and then they sold a majority chunk. I don't think it's exactly clarified, but most of the assets sold off for around $10 billion. So down from 45 to 10, which obviously still a generational run doing that kind of move. But RIP, one of the most legendary figures that we've seen in the space for a long time. Yeah, leverage will do you in if you get too levered up like that. It's crazy having $45 billion and being levered up almost at 4x there. You would expect that as you get bigger, typically people use less leverage the bigger they get.
Right.
But it almost seemed, and I don't know where he was at the start, but it almost seems like he got more levered the bigger he got. And that's just a recipe for disaster. And that's kind of what we saw back in crypto, right? Back in October of last year, we saw the crypto space getting the most levered they've ever gotten. Now you're seeing that happen in South Korea with the KOSPI. You're seeing it happen here with our buddy over at Situational Awareness. Yeah, tragedy. But again, you typically see big blowups happen as a reset. And, you know, out of these things come opportunity. And, you know, Citadel's the one to jump on this. But, you know, I think, again, the same idea kind of applies over to crypto as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And there's, you know, there's always something to talk about. That's why we love doing these shows. I appreciate you joining us on a Friday, Brendan. Thank you for your insight, your technical analysis. Again, if anybody's interested in more, getting more involved with Brendan, Bryce, the whole entire team, check the links below. We've got the $1 trials when we do the lives on YouTube. We appreciate everybody coming in. We had Florida. We had Ohio. We've got New Jersey. We've got, I forget where Bandit's from. I think Bandit's from out west, maybe. Bandit, where are you from? Have a good weekend, my friend. We always appreciate everybody doing these. And just a reminder, go back, listen to that first episode with Josh Frank from The Tie. We're going to be having more and more. The next one's going to be the former CFTC chairman, Christopher Giancarlo. You're not going to want to miss that. So make sure you hit the bell, notification, like, subscribe on YouTube. If you're an audio listener, we always appreciate you. Well, hit the notification button so you don't miss an episode drop. We're going to be putting out a lot more episodes these next couple weeks. But thank you, as always, for joining us. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.